Please raise.
Okay, I'm going to talk about a proposal for a mechanism to resolve a problem that arises in a proposal by Randall and Sundrum to solve the hierarchy problem. I should say from the outset, it's an issue that they were well aware of when they made this proposal and had some ideas about possible solutions as well. So what is their proposal for a solution to the hierarchy problem? I wasn't sure how much Raman would say about this when I prepared my transparency, so it's a little bit sketchy, but I think given what's gone before, it'll be pretty clear. So what's the scenario? We have a five-dimensional space-time, and it's not going to be infinite in this case. It's going to be a compactified space-time. You can try to run this scenario with an infinite space-time as well, but you run into these strong coupling issues, and I didn't have enough brains to feel confident about the strong coupling issues, and so we're going to deal with the compactified space. So people might be disappointed if that was the issue that they wanted to see addressed here. Okay, so we'll call the coordinate of the fifth dimension phi, and we'll have phi run between minus pi and pi, and phi will be compactified on a circle, but modded out with a z2. So as you go around the circle, you identify opposite points like this. 0 and pi are the fixed points of the identification. And we're going to put three brains at each of the fixed points. One at 0, one at pi. The one at 0 we'll call the hidden brain, because that's not where the standard model's fields will live. The one at pi we'll call the visible brain, because we're going to imagine that the standard model fields are localized on that brain or domain wall. So we're going to have a metric for the five-dimensional space-time, which I've written out here. The capital letters go over the five coordinates. And we'll just choose our coordinates on the three brains. So if I look at the induced metric on either the visible or the hidden brain, it matches up with the full metric just at phi equals 0 or phi equals pi. And there's other modifications of this scenario. This was the original one they proposed in their paper. It's the simplest one, and so we'll stick within this scenario. For my talk, at least. So we have an action. It's roughly the same one that Raman mentioned before. I can divide the action into several parts. There's a bulk part of the action. There's a part of the action for the visible brain, and part of the action for the hidden brain. And I want to start off not by discussing standard model fields or anything, but just discussing the background. So all we're going to put in these actions is, in the bulk, cosmological constant term, the usual curvature scalar term. We're going to imagine that the cosmological constant is negative. And then on each of the brains, I'll just put certain tensions on the brains. And we'll solve this problem, or I'll write down their solution for this problem. So you already know that since these are only terms that are on the brains, the solution for the bulk space is anti-de Sitter space, and then there's some matching you have to do at the brains. So if you go ahead and solve Einstein's equations, this is the solution that you get. So you get what's usually called now a warp factor, sigma of phi, ordinary flat space, A to mu nu is the flat metric, some parameter, which I'll just call RC squared times d phi squared. RC is a free parameter. Sigma, it's anti-de Sitter space, so it's K, RC, and because of the identification, the absolute value of phi, where K is just related to the input mass here. It's mass cubed because we're in five dimensions, not four dimensions. It's the Planck mass, if you'd like, in the five-dimensional space. K is related to the bulk cosmological constant and the five-dimensional Planck mass, and remember, lambda is negative. The way you match up the discontinuities to solve the equations is that if you look at things like the second derivative of sigma, because of the absolute value, you've got delta functions, which you can use to solve the Einstein's equations. So what do you find when you solve it? Well, you find that in addition to this being the solution, that you can solve it, but you can only solve it with this being the solution if you make two fine-tunings. One fine-tuning you're already familiar with. We're going to want the effective four-dimensional cosmological constant to be zero. But there's an additional fine-tuning, because you only find a solution if the tension on the hidden brain is minus the tension on the visible brain, which is minus lambda over this constant K. So I want to start off. Well, it's a little bit hard to imagine the brain is made up of something, but apart from that, you can get such things in string theory is about all I can say. Whether it's good or bad, it's hard to... Yeah, it can't fluctuate. You get rid of that by the orbifolding. Yeah. That's true. It'd be hard to have it without that, otherwise it would fluctuate wildly. I'm going to explain that now. So why did the other fine-tuning arise physically? What was the reason? Remember, we were asking for a solution with the brains fixed there. And we found a solution where the effective four-dimensional cosmological constant was zero, because we wanted that as well. Let's break up our calculation of that four-dimensional effective cosmological constant into various pieces. If I calculate the contribution to it from integrating over phi from the bulk part of the action, I get this. And if I calculate from the hidden part of the action, I just get a constant. And from the hidden brain, I just get a constant. And from the visible brain, I get this constant here. Now remember, RC has a physical interpretation as the separation between the two three brains. And let me group the terms in this way, combining the constant term and the term here. And now let's imagine that we tried to have our parameters deviate from that fine-tuning by a small amount. Then I could try to treat that deviation as a perturbation. And you can see what this perturbation is doing is introducing an effective potential for this quantity RC, so it no longer wants to stay constant. Depending on the sign of that term, the brains want to separate or the brains want to come together. And so we suspect that if we have a mechanism for stabilizing the separation between the two three brains, this additional fine-tuning will be unnecessary, and that's indeed what happens. Does that answer your question? Well, let's talk about the massless degrees of freedom in this problem, or in this scenario. So one of them, obviously, is the graviton. We've talked about that a little bit before. If you write the metric in this way, and this is the warp factor, and call this g mu nu, then as a function of x, then it will be the ordinary four-dimensional graviton. And so if we plug this ansatz in the five-dimensional action, the root gr term, we can figure out what the effective four-dimensional Planck mass is in this theory in terms of our input parameters, capital M and capital K. So I'm going to do the integral. Basically, from root g, you get a factor of e to the minus 4k rc phi. From the curvature scalar, you get the ordinary four-dimensional curvature scalar in terms of this, with two factors of this, and then you integrate over phi. Well, this is an integral we can all do, because it's just an exponential. It's about... Since mathematics, it's probably about the only one we can all do. But anyways, you just get m cubed over k 1 minus this exponential. And we're going to imagine that this exponential is actually a small quantity. We're going to use that small quantity, or Randall and Sundrum use that small quantity to solve the hierarchy problem. And so the ordinary Planck mass is of the same order as the input parameter m and k. And what I'd like to imagine for this talk is that all our input parameters are of order the Planck mass. And what we want to do is generate, from all parameters being of order the Planck mass, the weak scale. I should say, when I say by order the Planck mass, you know, it's a little bit of a qualitative statement. A third of the Planck mass is okay. A tenth of the Planck mass is probably okay. A tenth of the minus 12 the Planck mass is certainly not okay. So, you know, it's a little bit of a judgment statement when you say those things. Okay. At this point, though, we should recognize that there's another massless degree of freedom in this problem, because the additional fine-tuning was arranged so that there'd be no potential for RC. And that means if I promote RC to a field, that four-dimensional field has no mass term, in fact, no potential at all. It's what you'd call a modulus. So really, if I want to characterize the full set of massless degrees of freedom in this problem, there's two of them. There's where the graviton lives, g mu nu, and promoting RC to a field, T of x, there's the modulus field here. and T of x is also massless. And most of this talk is devoted to deriving an effective field theory for T of x, and in particular, deriving a potential term for T of x so we can stabilize the separation between the three brains. And before I do that, I have to mention what the idea was for the solution to the hierarchy problem, because that's going to tell us what type of separation that we're interested in getting. So in order to see how that works, let's imagine that we have a field, scalar field just for simplicity, H of x, with some mass mu naught confined to the visible three brain. And we want mu naught to be of order of the Planck mass, because everything's of order of the Planck mass. We're trying to solve the hierarchy problem. I don't want to put it on the weak scale. So the action for this field, we can write out here in terms of the induced metric on the visible brain. Well, we know what the induced metric is. It's just got this exponential factor times eta mu nu, and so we put that in. So there's e to the minus 4k rc pi from this factor. This has got the indices upstairs, so it's the inverse there. And this is our Lagrangian. When you have a Lagrangian like this, you have some big factor here. In order to interpret what the mass is, you can easily just rescale your field by one factor of this, so you have a canonically normalized scalar field. And then this other factor, what's left over here, will be what you'd call the mass. And so the physical mass, mu squared, is this mu naught squared times e to the minus 2 krc pi. So this is the basic idea for relating this to the hierarchy problem. Because of this exponentially varying metric, if I have all the scales in the problem, mu naught be order of the Planck mass, k be order of the Planck mass, as long as I can manage to get a number like 10, RC of 10 out of the problem, then I can get an exponential that's big enough, KRC around 10, in order to scale this mass down enough to solve the hierarchy problem. So it's, in some sense, it's like Technicolor. You've got it into a logarithm, where you've taken the exponential and tried to solve the problem for the argument of the exponential. Is that clear? So that's the guts of the idea for the solution to the hierarchy problem. And now I want to proceed and discuss the effective action for this modulus field T. And clearly, we have to add something to the model. Otherwise, we're not going to stabilize the separation. So I want to propose for you a scenario that my student Walter Goldberger and I proposed for stabilizing this separation. So I'm going to add something. I'll add a scalar field. One of the goals in this talk is to call as many things as possible phi. And you'll see I've done a very good job at that as we go on through this talk. So the scalar field is capital phi. And we're going to have an action for the scalar field. And it's a little bit ad hoc, but let's just do something simple. Let's imagine that's a free scalar field in the bulk. I'm going to want it to have an action on each of the brains as well. And the thing that's important about the actions on the brains is that I want those actions to have the field want to get vacuum expectation values on each of the brains, each of the three brains, the visible one and the hidden one. And furthermore, I want those expectation values to be different. So I have a little aside here on the dimensions of things, because when I write a formula, if anyone's really paying enough attention to look at it, naively, if you thought this was a four-dimensional coupling, lambda phi to the fourth coupling would be dimensionless because of the fact that this is a five-dimensional scalar field. It's got funny dimensions. The dimensions of the quantities are a little bit different. But basically, don't worry if the formula doesn't look dimensionally right at the end. It is, because these were five-dimensional quantities. So phi wants to get one VeV, VH, on the hidden brain, another VeV, VV, on the visible brain. And so if I have, if the brains are separated by a certain distance, then phi will develop some profile, some vacuum expectation value. That profile will have a certain energy associated with it, and therefore will develop a potential for the modulus. So what we have to imagine now, in order to describe this potential, I'm going to do it in a simple case, making various approximations, and then I'll talk about some other work that was done more recently that's very beautiful work that they've been able to show it in much more general circumstances. But first, let's do the simple situation. And what we're going to imagine is that I'm God and I'm holding each of the three brains. Well, that might be hard for some of you to imagine. And so maybe we should. Oh, he's gone. This is great. We'll imagine that David Gross is God, and he's holding the three brains, or maybe he told me to hold them. And we're going to hold them at various separations. We're going to start close together, move them apart, and what I'm going to do is draw the profile of the scalar field, capital phi, as a function of little phi, and then we'll talk about the energy stored in that profile. And we're going to work in a very naive picture. Forget about the Randall-Sundrum part, the metric, because then it becomes impossible to draw because you've got this huge exponential variation. Let's just pretend it was ordinary flat space for the moment just so you can see the competing effects that are going on. So I'm going to draw the profile for phi. We're going to neglect the back reaction on the metric, so it's just the ordinary particle physics energy we're talking about here. So first of all, let me just remind you of the features one more time before I go on, because they're not on the next transparency. We got a scalar field, bulk scalar field, massive in the bulk with mass little m, and couplings on each of the brains that want it to get vacuum expectation values, different ones on each of the brains. And I'm going to imagine to start off that little m is small, somewhat smaller than the Planck mass, maybe a tenth of the Planck mass. Oh, God just came back. I'm still holding the brain, that's right. He left me holding the bag. Okay, so let's just go through this. It's first of all, we start off with the brains fixed to the very, very close together. Phi wants to achieve each of these vacuum expectation values, but it can't, because in order to achieve them, it would have to vary between this and this over a small distance. That costs me a lot of kinetic energy, bulk kinetic energy, derivative energy in the action. And so instead, it stays roughly flat, goes somewhere between them. Now, as we pull the brains apart a little bit further, then it costs less kinetic energy for them to drop, and so they can drop and get closer to the vacuum expectation values there, so we have a reduction of the energy. The potential is falling with the separation. Eventually, as we get to large enough separation, the bulk mass kicks in, and that causes the field in the middle to want to depress because of the bulk mass. The energy starts to go up. And then as the things get widely separated, it just plateaus to a constant because it just falls down here, goes across, and goes back up. But you've seen the competing effects that you need to get a minimum of potential. Roughly, we're going to end up with a potential like this, one that starts off at some fixed value, falls, then when the mass kicks in, goes back up and plateaus. As the mass gets smaller, you'll push this thing out further. Yeah? I guess I don't understand the question. They're just coupling constants in the theory from my... Well, there is the warp factor that gives you some coupling constant, but you're worried about some possible logarithmic running from... Well, I'm viewing them as just constants in a Lagrangian, so they're just numbers. No, but there really is a massless field associated with there's a massless field from the four-dimensional point of view, T. That's the problem. There's no massless field if I call V a number. So that's the picture. That really is the essence of the idea. So I'll do a little arithmetic associated with the idea just to make it seem a little fancier. So let's say you still want to picture it the way I did with neglecting the back reaction. I'll talk a little bit about that later on. Then what's the mathematics that you would do that corresponds to deriving that potential? Well, you would solve the classical equations for capital phi as a function of phi. So it's a free scalar field in the bulk, and there's these additional terms on the visible and on the hidden brain. These just come with delta functions as a five-dimensional equation. So away from the brains, you know the solution. It's very simple. It's just written in terms of that sigma, which is KRC phi. And nu here is the square root of 4 plus m squared over k squared. And if you have, OK, so we have to determine A and B. A and B will be determined by plugging this form for the scalar field back into the equations and then matching up the discontinuities from the derivatives on sigma to match the delta functions. So you could find the solution. And if we take that solution for capital phi of phi and plug it back in the action and do the integral over phi, we'll get what I would call the potential energy associated with this configuration. So what does that look like? I'm going to give you a formula for the potential in these approximations and making a few other approximations. For example, here I treated lambda h and lambda v as large. This is a formula for the potential at large distances, large RC. We'll talk a little bit about small RC in a moment. And you can see that it's got some constant term. Epsilon is just m squared over 4k squared, so it's something I want to imagine is small for the moment. And so there's a constant term here, and then there's an additional term here, which displays the minimum that I was talking about. It has a minimum at KRC. It's 4 over pi k squared over m squared times the logarithm of the ratio of the vacuum expectation values. And so, for example, if you have m over k around 0.2 and the ratio of VEVs 1.5, you can get KRC around 10, 12. So that's the idea for solving the hierarchy problem. You really don't need to do any strong fine-tuning because m, this parameter in the Lagrangian, really controls the exponential, and so you just need m about a tenth of the Planck mass, or even bigger than that. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a moment. We'll talk about the cosmological constant in a moment. I want to say another thing about this potential, and that is it's a really weird potential. That's why I couldn't draw it before, because if you ask how big it is, this is exponentially suppressed. If everything is Planck size here, this takes you down to the weak scale, to the fourth. But when you get really close together, it goes all the way up to something of size m Planck to the fourth. And so this potential, you can't draw it on a single transparency if you want to show the blip that's giving you the minimum. Is that clear? Yeah? I'm going to talk about that later. Well, later, next transparency, or start talking about that next transparency. So I should say about things that have been done since this. Well, there was this beautiful paper that came out recently where they're able to treat potentials that are more complicated than the one that I treated, including potentials in the bulk. They're able to include the back reaction, in some cases analytically, and solve for the metric. They found other regions and model space that don't really correspond to small masses, but other regions of model space that are able to give you this factor of 10. In addition, they were able to do a stability analysis to show that there really is only one massless particle when you stabilize it, which is the graviton. Anyway, Steve is here, so talk to him if you want more details about that. I want to mention one more physics point about this before we go on. And that's that it's clear now that we don't need the additional fine-tuning of the cosmological constants. For example, remember what that fine-tuning was? It was that the tensions on the two brains were equal and opposite, and related to the bulk cosmological constant in this way. So what I want to imagine is doing a little bit more than just generate this potential. Let's now, this is just for convenience, let's just imagine taking those tensions and moving them away from the fine-tuned values. And for convenience, I'll move them away a small amount, because then I can talk about them as perturbations, but that's really only for convenience. So if I move them away from the finely tuned values, then I'll introduce a new potential for RC, a new contribution to its potential, which I could call V sub lambda of RC, which is a constant plus another exponentially suppressed piece. And as long as this is not too big, then it doesn't destroy the minimum of the potential. It's also got the minus 4k RC pi, so it's nominally of the same order. And I can use this one to adjust the cosmological constant at the minimum to be zero. And so there really is just one fine tuning, the adjustment of the cosmological constant at the minimum to be zero. Now I want to go on to discuss more about the effective action for this mode T, and this is something that I just started to think about, should have thought about it a long time ago, but I just started to think about it on Friday. So there's no guarantee that what I'm about to say is correct. And now it's going to be recorded and on the web, but nonetheless I'm going to say it. And this is how I currently think it's going to go, and it's something that I'm working on with my student, Walter Goldberger. So remember, we promoted RC to this field, T of X, and we've got its potential. But if you want to know, let's say, its mass, you don't just need its potential. You better have its kinetic term, because if there's some big factor there, then its mass can change from what you might have thought it was, just looking at the potential. So we better work out the kinetic term for this as well. It's not hard to do. Recall that if I promote T to a field, this is the five-dimensional metric. And so I should plug this metric in root gr and figure out what the kinetic term is for, do the integral over phi, and figure out what the kinetic term is for t. So here's the action that you get. Before you do the phi integration, I've written it out. It's so this little g here is just the metric from here. Here's all the phi dependents displayed. And then we have to do the remaining phi integration to get the action. What do we get? Well, there's a coupling to T of R. It was mentioned before, in essence, because remember, the Planck mass had this factor of 1 minus e to the 2 pi KRC. Probably there should be a K here. And I promoted RC to a field T, and so this is that coupling. And if you do the phi integration to get the coupling for T, it ends up that it can all be written in terms of this exponential as d mu of the exponential of minus k pi t d mu of the exponential of minus k pi t. So that field enters in with an exponentially suppressed kinetic term. What does this mean? Well, it means that the properly normalized modulus field is what else? Phi, which is f e to the minus k pi t, where f is just to take care of this factor here. F has got some units with respect to mass, and it's set by the Planck scale. And so with this exponential factor here, the VEV of T is of order 1 TeV. So for the canonically normalized field, its vacuum expectation value will be of order TeV, because everything's of order the Planck mass, except this exponential scales it down to the weak scale. It's a little bit curious that for R you get the 1 here, and here you only get the exponentially suppressed terms. It's not something I completely understand at this point, but that's what you get from the calculation. You can write the potential that I wrote out before in terms of the canonically normalized field phi. That's not so hard to do. You just plug this in. And phi gets a vacuum expectation value, which, as I mentioned, is of order a TeV. And the mass squared from phi, well, it's also of order TeV, because remember, everything is of order the Planck mass, but it's suppressed a little bit. It's suppressed by this epsilon, which was something like a tenth. Why is it suppressed? Well, it's not hard to imagine that that would happen physically, because remember, we were trying to take this potential and stretch it out a little bit, further along where its minimum should lie than is natural. And one way you do that is you sort of broaden out the potential. And that's why the mass is somewhat smaller than the TeV scale. So I'm not sure quite how generic this is right now, but certainly in the model where it gets pushed, the VEV gets pushed out because the bulk scalar field has a small mass, this field comes out somewhat smaller than the TeV scale. Now remember, we're talking about an expansion parameter here when I say small, which is epsilon. It's only something like a tenth. So, you know, if you get a 3 from, if you try to do this in a more general context and you get a 3 or 4 upstairs, it's not going to be that small. But generically, you'd expect in a scenario like this that of the massive fields around, like, for example, the Kaluza-Klein excitations of the graviton, they should come out several TeV, and this modulus field should be somewhat below the scale, like maybe something like 100 GeV, just to make my experimental colleagues, none of which are here, happy. How does it couple? Well, remember, the modulus field is just some component of the metric, and in particular appears on the induced metric. The induced metric on our visible brain is just this field divided by F squared times G mu nu, the ordinary graviton. And so I know how this field couples to every terminal Lagrangian, because I just know where the factors of the metric go. So that's nice. If you're going to have a like degree of freedom, it's nice to know what its couplings are. So, for example, if I have a scalar field, H of X confined to the visible brain, then the couplings of this scalar field, the modulus field, which of course I've called phi, is given like this. Mu naught, remember, is the bare mass, or the mass in the Lagrangian of order the Planck mass. Remember, phi is going to get a vacuum expectation value. And so we should rescale this field H to have its canonically normalized kinetic term, the usual kinetic term when phi takes on its vacuum expectation value. And once you do that, all the couplings of phi are written just in terms of phi over its vacuum expectation value. And so this extra field, this modulus field, which is expected to be the lightest degree of freedom in this problem, has universal couplings suppressed by its vacuum expectation value, which is like a TeV, and it's got a mass somewhat smaller than the Planck mass of order 100 GeV, let's say. I'm not sure how generic all of these features are, to be honest with you. I've really only worked it out in the case of the particular model where the potential gets a large VEV because of the small mass of the smallish mass of the bulk scalar field. Well, that's something that I'm working on right now. Any question? You? Right. You mean of RC and big phi? Well, I think that's what you mean anyway. Yeah, I think you're probably right. I just started this right. You're probably right. Now, I've just started to think about this. So I'm not sure. That's what I said before. I'm not sure how generic all these couplings are. It couples with the metric, yeah, from the energy momentum tensor. That's right. Well, remember, really, m is just a tenth. So if I have a loop correction cut off at the Planck scale, it's going to be smaller than that. If I had to push m down to a very small number, I'd have to face this issue. But you know, m is not that small. It's some mass for a bulk field. It's of order of the Planck scale. No, hold it. The mass for the bulk field is of order of the Planck mass. It's somewhat smaller than that, maybe a fifth of the Planck mass. It's not many orders of magnitude smaller. So there's not a naturalist problem associated with that. This field comes out, I mean, it's not, you know, many orders of magnitude smaller than the TeV scale, but, you know, only by that same factor. So it could disappear if the model is complicated enough, as I mentioned before, because it's only something like a tenth. It's the 10 in the numerator. No, I don't think it will. But they'll be down by order alpha. It'll still be smaller. 4 pi, 16 pi squared. That's a big number. I'm only talking about a tenth here. How much time do I have left? 10 minutes. Okay, well, I want to go on and discuss one more thing before, probably I won't even take the full 10 minutes. Since we started since we introduced this bulk scalar into the theory in order to solve this problem or to provide a stabilization mechanism, I'd like to talk a little bit more about what the Kaluza-Klein excitations look like for a Planck mass bulk scalar in this theory. So now I've got a bulk scalar. Of course, it's called capital phi. And we're not going to imagine, it's not the one that solves this, that stabilizes the separation between the brains. It's just some bulk scalar in this theory. Massive scalar with a massive order of the Planck mass. You might think very naively that if you have a bulk scalar with a Planck mass of order of the with a massive order of the Planck mass, that its Kaluza-Klein excitations would also be of order of the Planck mass, or the effective four-dimensional degrees of freedom. But because of this warp factor, it ends up that that's not the case. So I just want to talk a little bit about that. So what we're going to do is we're going to take this scalar, we're going to perform Kaluza-Klein decomposition, where you have a functions of x, and then eigenmodes, yn of phi, that are functions of phi. There's some mode equation you have to solve to get the eigenfunctions, and it's one of the usual problems you learned how to solve as an undergraduate, and so the modes are orthogonal. And then once you expand in terms of these modes, the action is just a sum of some field psi n with certain masses mn. So the question that I want to address are, what do the mn's look like? So the appropriate boundary conditions for this problem are that the derivatives of y with respect to phi be continuous at phi equals 0 and phi equals pi. And then it's pretty easy to just go ahead and solve the eigenvalue problem. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the solution to the eigenvalue problem. So let me define nu to be this quantity 4 plus m squared over k squared. And first, let me talk about the solution to the eigenvalue problem for e to the krc pi large, because that's the situation that we're interested in if we're going to solve the hierarchy problem. It ends up in that case that the masses are related to some numbers times k, which is the order of the Planck's mass, times this exponential factor. And so those masses are weak scale masses. And these numbers x, they're just roots of of this equation involving Bessel functions. So for m over k of order unity, the lowest root is something that's of order the TEV scale, not of order the Planck scale. What this means, of course, this is happening for the reason that Raman explained before. If I look at the eigenmode, it wants to live near the visible brain, and everything gets scaled by the exponential factor there, and so its mass ends up being a weak scale mass. This is true even if m over k is very small, even compared to the Planck, well, this is dimensionless. Even if m over k is very small, as long as it's not exponentially small, then the lowest mass state ends up having lowest mass Kaluza-Klein state ends up having a mass of order the TeV scale. So this brings up a phenomenological question. Maybe we really don't have to confine the standard models to the brain. Maybe they can just live in the bulk, and their lowest Kaluza-Klein modes can be what we call the standard model fields. Of course, if you're going to have anything with standard model quantum numbers live in the bulk, you've got to have the gauge bosons live in the bulk. And there's been some recent papers that have tried to address this issue phenomenologically, and they find that it's very difficult to do, that a model like that is not going to work. So we still got to have the standard model fields confined in a different sense than this to the visible brain. Thank you. I don't think that's right at all, actually. But go ahead, finish. Well, yeah, one thing. Okay, well, that question I can answer. So, first of all, you have to remember that I cut off the size of the space. So there's no, if I stay with energies below a TeV scale, there's no strong coupling issue at low momentum in this theory. If I didn't have that second brain and made the space infinite, I'd come into the strong coupling problem. So what I could imagine now doing is just calculating Feynman diagrams with the cutoff being the Planck mass. If I do that, there's no problem. So that's really all I know. There's no infrared problem either. Well, that's more complicated, and I didn't discuss that case because it has this strong coupling issue, which I don't feel. Well, you have to address that issue in that case, obviously. No, but let's just address the question that was asked. Is this really a finely... Oh, okay.